Our theme for this morning, in a moment, is going to be the cost of living. And I've chosen as the passage that we're going to be looking at today a passage from Luke chapter 14, which in this Bible is entitled The Cost of Being a Disciple. And so I'm going to read from verse 25 to 35. Large crowds were travelling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, 'This person began to build and wasn't able to finish.' Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he's not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. Salt is good. But if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear." Ever since I knew that I would be speaking to you today, I've been asking God what he wanted me to share. Some key ideas and words have emerged over the weeks, and as I was preparing, I felt drawn to this passage in Luke 14. It's not the easiest of passages, but one which I feel God will speak to us through today. And let's start by qualifying the title. We're not talking about inflation or fuel costs, although God does care very much about these things. Rather, we're talking about the cost of living for Jesus. In the passage from Luke 14, which we just read, Jesus was speaking to the crowd. But as one commentator puts it, he was calling not for spectators, but for recruits. When he called people to follow him, he meant them not to tag along behind him out of curiosity, but to throw in their lot with him in commitment. So let me begin with a question. How serious are you about Jesus? How serious am I? Jesus gives his listeners three challenges. Three challenges which face us if we choose to be serious about following Jesus. Firstly, how much do you love me? Verse 26 says, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." Jesus asks us to love him more than we do our own family. He uses a literary device which doesn't literally mean that we have to hate our family. Instead, it's a typical biblical way of expressing preference, which means to love this rather than that. Love for our family is to be so far surpassed by our love for Jesus that in comparison, it will seem like hatred. You will know that for many, the decision to become a Christian does involve being rejected by their family. Let me tell you about Nadia, who lives in Pakistan. When Nadia left Islam to follow Christ, her family were furious. They grew even angrier when in 2014 she married Alim, a Christian whose family had been Christians for generations. Nadia's Muslim relatives felt that she had dishonored them all by what she had done, so they set out to restore the family honor. After the wedding, Alim and Nadia, knowing themselves to be in danger, fled to another town. Nadia's mother stayed in contact with her daughter by telephone. After a while, she told Nadia that the family had forgiven the couple and asked them to come and meet them. Trustingly, the couple travelled to a famous Muslim shrine and waited in a rickshaw. Suddenly, Nadia's father, her brother, and a stranger got into the rickshaw and forced the driver at gunpoint to take them to a farm where they were attacked. Nadia survived, but her husband didn't. We may not be rejected by our family for following Jesus, but are we willing to be? Jesus asks us today, how much do you love me? Secondly, how much will you sacrifice for me? Verse 27 says, whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Jesus asks us to carry our cross. In other words, to surrender absolutely to God's authority. In doing so, he's not asking us to do anything that he hasn't already done. Just a short time after speaking these words, Jesus literally carried his cross as he walked to his death. Elsewhere, Jesus says about himself, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The bottom line is, am I willing to die for Jesus? The fact is that for many of our brothers and sisters around the world today, this is a real question, a real choice that they make every day, because their faith in Jesus puts their lives at risk. Let me share just one story, which makes quite difficult listening. Some of you will remember that on Easter Day in 2019, several churches in Sri Lanka were attacked by suicide bombers. That very morning, at Zion Evangelical Church in Batakaloa, the Sunday school teachers asked the children, how many of you are willing to die for Christ? Every child raised their hand. Minutes later, the class was over. The children spilled out to play in the church grounds while the adult congregation gathered inside for the main Easter worship service. It was then that a suspicious-looking stranger was ushered out of the building by a church member. He was a suicide bomber. And that day, he killed at least 15 adults and 14 of the children who had just pledged their willingness to die for Christ. We may not be asked to give our life for Jesus, but are we willing to do so? That's the level of sacrifice he's asking for. Thirdly, how much will you give? In verses 28 to 33, Jesus gives two illustrations. First, of a building, which has to be budgeted for in terms of financial resources, and then of a battle, which has to be planned for in terms of human resources. In both situations, the challenge is the same. Do I have enough to complete the task? And in this case, enough means everything. Jesus requires total service, total commitment. There's no room for provisos, for conditions, for ifs and buts. Let me give you some current examples of what Christians are having to give because of their faith. These stories come from the Open Doors website, working to support persecuted Christians. Imagine not being able to access your workplace or being treated unfairly once you get there. In Nigeria, Christian farmers can't access their land as it's been taken over by militants. Also in Nigeria, Christian men are being discriminated against by the government's armed forces. Christian soldiers are being sent to the most dangerous parts of the country, where they're more at risk of being killed. Imagine being ostracized by your community and having your finances cut off. In China, Christians who leave Buddhism to follow Jesus are threatened and abused by their families and communities. Women are sometimes divorced by their husbands, and some people have had their homes destroyed and their government benefits cancelled. We may not suffer in these ways, but are we willing to give everything for Jesus? His message is uncompromising. Those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. Going God's way takes precedence over everything else. And Jesus invites each of us each day to make that decision to follow him, and how we express our love for him, how much we're prepared to sacrifice for him, and how much of ourselves we're willing to give him. Through everyday choices, God regularly tests our commitment by bringing us to a fork in the road. Commentator Michael Wilcock imagines God challenging us in this way. Suppose I were to lead you towards work in which your income would be lower, your prospects more uncertain, your accustomed standard of living non-existent. Or suppose I were to ask you to do something for me which, according to most people, is simply not done. Would you even then come my way? When it becomes necessary to choose between two ways, which do we follow? Comfort, convention, custom, or Christ? The test from the very outset has been, follow me. Earlier in Luke's Gospel, Jesus challenges his disciples with these words. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? This is one of the great paradoxes of the Christian life. The best way to live is to give up your life. The best way to live is to sacrifice your own life, your own plans, your own desires, your own priorities, and to follow Jesus. We are invited into a relationship of complete submission and dependence, like that of sheep and the shepherd. Jesus knows what's best for us, and he knows that the best way is to follow him and listen to his voice. As he promised, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Michael Wilcock again. That is what it means to be a disciple. That is the distinctive saltiness of the salt, the thing that makes it what it is, the discipleship which characterizes the disciples of Jesus. The time is now. The person concerned is you, just as you are. The demand is everything. Now, if you're anything like me, you may be feeling quite daunted at this point. It's all very well talking about total commitment, ultimate sacrifice, giving up everything and laying down your life for God. And of course, this is what we want. This is how we want to live. But what does this mean practically for me today? This year as a church, we've been focusing on the fundamental building blocks of our faith, being rooted in prayer, which we looked at in the spring, in worship, which we've been considering this summer, and in God's word, which we'll be looking at in the autumn. And next year, we're going to be spending some time looking at the whole area of discipleship, moving from being rooted to growing in our faith and sowing the seeds of the gospel in our community. But in the meantime, let me give you a few pointers to help you get going. First of all, start small. Zechariah 4 verse 10 says, "Do not despise the day of small things or small beginnings." Our God is a God of small things. He uses the small to achieve great things. This is the God who chose one man, Abraham, to found a nation, who incidentally was 75 years old when God first called him. He chose one small nation among many, Israel, to model the relationship between God and humankind. This is the God who decided that Jesus, the divine Son of God, would be born as a human baby with all the limitations that involved. This is the God who tells his disciples that they only need faith the size of a mustard seed, the smallest of all the seeds, to do seemingly impossible things. This is the God who takes the weak, the foolish, the despised, and turns them into strength, wisdom, and honor. Why does God do this? Because it means we're more dependent on him. It means we do things in his strength rather than our own. It means we don't boast about our own achievements, but we boast in the Lord and give glory to him. Secondly, start with the one. During one of the team meetings in Frinton Mission Week, Mark reminded us that the Gospels record between 40 and 50 individual encounters with Jesus during his ministry on earth. Yes, he spoke to crowds, but he also spoke to the one. And when he healed one at a time. Each person matters. As you look back at how you met God and began a relationship of discipleship with him, there will be certain individuals who stand out. They took time for you. Can I encourage you to take time for the one? One simple way in which you can do this is by writing a 6-word testimony and then sharing it. This involves summarizing what your relationship with Jesus means to you in just 6 words. Let me give you some examples from members of our church who were on the Love Frinton, Love Walton team during Frinton Mission, where we were encouraged to do this. Black and white, now in color. Crippled by sin, now set free. Heart of stone, heart of flesh. Jesus is my peace, my everything. Rejected, broken, Jesus. Found, loved, home. It's powerful because it's personal to you, and you'll be much more confident sharing it with other people. Can I encourage you to try doing this yourself and then share it with one other person this week? Maybe someone who already has a relationship with Jesus or with someone who doesn't yet. In this way, your conversation will be seasoned with salt, as it says in Colossians 4. Thirdly, start by listening. The passage that we read from Luke 14 ends like this. Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. It's very simple. Ask God to speak to you and then listen to him. In John 10, Jesus says, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. And if you're listening to this, realizing that you don't yet have this close relationship with God, that you're not following Jesus, can I encourage you to do so? This is what the Christian faith is all about. Recognizing that we can't live life on our own, that we need a saviour, and that by deciding to follow him, by asking for his forgiveness and inviting his presence in our lives, we find life, we find freedom, we find new purpose. If that's you, I would love to send you a New Testament so that you can read about Jesus' life for yourself and discover what an incredible person he is and how much he is worth giving up everything for. Please get in touch with us, contact the church, and we will send you a New Testament so that you can read this for yourself. I can guarantee that it will change your life forever. And finally, start now. In Hebrews chapters 3 and 4, several times we read this. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. Don't put it off. Don't wait for a better time. Say yes to him now.